Hey guys, it's Justin Hill here. Strap on your high heels and put on your pads because we're going drag racing. Ah, crap. She's bottomed out, guys. Play the music.
Hey, darlings, we're back. Welcome to season 3 of the Stan Original RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under the podcast. As the pirate ship containing this season's queens gets closer and closer with the season premiere, I'm kicking off this round of the podcast with not just the executive producer of the show, but also the co-creator of World of Wonder itself, Fenton Bailey. I spoke with Fenton about all things Drag Race, his book Screen Age, and I've got to say, if you're a drag queen who has just started, if you're a drag queen who's been doing it for years or any other period of time really, if performing is your thing and if you feel like entertaining is what you were meant to do, then this is the episode for you. I get some absolute golden inspiration from Fenton about celebrating the successes and the failures, stories about Rue and so much more, and I cannot wait for you to hear it. Here is my chat with Fenton Bailey. Speaking to Fenton Bailey, who, don't mind me if I call you this, you are kind of like the fairy godfather to a lot of us. And I kind of want to take a very self-indulgent moment and say, I've been reading your book and have followed you for a long time. And by creating World of Wonder, you have allowed the careers to flourish for people like me. And even being World of Wonder adjacent, I just want to take a moment to thank you for that, because you are just opening doors, windows, peepholes, everything for gay people all over the world. So we really, really appreciate you.
You are so sweet. That is so lovely. And to, in all honesty and fairness, like it's really not me. Like, you know, it takes a village. It takes a village, people. And there's a coven of fairies, like, you know, Randy and Tom Campbell and Darren and of course, you know, Rue, who I think, you know, in doing drag race from the beginning, I think was a very radical thing for a drag queen to create a platform for others, you know?
And reading your book, Screen Age, I feel like every story that you have of Rue, be it the moment where he's got the paste and the bucket and the posters, or the first time you saw him in the loincloth with the mohawk and the shoulder pads, is every memory that you have of Rue in Technicolor like that? Because it paints such a vivid picture of this person that has been in your life for such a long time.
They are cinematic moments. It's true. and I guess that's that, you know, Rue presents cinematically. You know, he's a big screen experience. I mean, quite apart from being a lovely person. I think something else, though, I've always come away from talking to Rue is I always learn something. There's always, or he always gives me something to think about. You know, I do think sometimes the profundity of his artistry or what he's saying gets not lost, not at all. But I sometimes don't think we quite recognize how profound a person he really is and how wise he is. And he's certainly, there's so many sort of reference points in my worldview that I owe to him, you know. I mean, you're born naked and the rest is drag. I mean, just starting with that, sounds such a sort of flippant thing to say or cliche because it's said so often, but really it's fundamentally, profoundly true, you know.
It's words to live by.
Exactly, you know, all the time, you know. And that's why I do think that, that's why I think that, or I feel motivated in the sense that drag may be what we as LGBTQ plus people do, but it's not for us alone, you know. It is as relevant to a straight person as it is a universal thing.
At drag con, how many you know, straight identifying women that go along to these events? It's wild. It's great.
Exactly. And you know, the stories of the kids in the workroom when they're on the show, those aren't LGBTQ plus exclusive issues. They are issues that everybody faces in their lives. And
absolutely.
The show wouldn't still be around 15 years later, you know?
The thing about this show and the thing about your book is that as I'm reading it, I'm sure you meant to do this, but I want to put on every single song that you mention. I want to put on every movie. I want to rewatch some of those movies because you just have had such an incredible, incredible life. And the one thing I love about you, Fenton, is that you are very honest about the things that work and the things that don't work, or what has worked for you, your successes and your failures. And I feel like in this day and age, and particularly with drag, particularly with people in the media like me, is that we're a bit scared to talk about our failures. Mm. But I wonder if you could maybe bestow some advice on how have you picked yourself up when a project that you really believe in and a project that you thought was going to be the big thing, be it the Pop-Tarts or whatever it was. How do you pick yourself up when you sort of realize that it's going nowhere?
Well, it is. There's no question, I think, that it is really hard to deal with failure because we live in a world that everything's geared to success and we don't have a lot of shows or stories told about spectacular failures. Even the ones that do get told, normally it's about failure on the route to incredible success. Mm-hmm. So, and I've often actually wanted to do a project like a film about the Pop-Tarts because, a story that doesn't end with success, I think would be a good one because that's...
No happy ending.
Right, no happy ending. But then on the other hand, I have also come to believe that no time doing anything is wasted. You know, it's all additive, and that I as much as the next person, I was very much focused on success and in a terrible state in my 20s because it was just so. It just didn't seem to ever that it was ever going to happen.
It's consuming,
I do love what Quentin Crisp said. He said, you know, if at first you don't succeed, failure may be your style. And what I love about that is to me, unpacking that, it's about realizing that you make the mistake is if you invest your sense of self-worth with the project succeeding, because there is no connection. Mm-hmm. And understandably, you want everything to succeed, but it's not going to. And that has nothing to do with your value as a person. Mm. And I love that he said that because he turned something that's really depressing and frustrating and soul destroying into something really funny. And I think that ultimately is the key thing is, you know, just not to take it all too seriously and not to lose your sense of humor, which again is really hard when, you know, when you've given something your all and when you have no money and it just looks like every door is closed. To have a sense of humor about it all is perhaps the toughest thing of all.
It really is. I love how you approach it though, because you were just like, well, maybe it's just not meant to be. Like, but then I feel like in your book, you also, like when you get to that juncture, when you talk about something that maybe didn't work out, you kind of almost say, it's almost like we turn a corner with you and you're like, but this happened. And so I think that's probably what you have to look for as well, is the silver lining of like, well, I wouldn't have gotten to this point.
The silver lining with the Pop-Tarts is meeting Rue. I mean, exactly. we wouldn't have met him, you know?
Exactly.
So what a silver lining that is, you know?
It really is. Hey, I don't want to get political on you, but I kind of love that you are political in your book and it is important. And a lot of my, gay mentors that I've been talking to a lot lately, especially with World Pride in Australia, have said, be political. The concept of banning drag shows that we're seeing in the US at the moment, and I mean, it's very heartwarming to see a lot of big names coming out and supporting and saying, you know, you've been entertained by drag for years. We've had some similar things happen recently here in Australia with some people questioning story time in schools and things like that. But I wanted to know if there's someone out there who maybe isn't so educated on why this is important to us. What would your Cliff Notes version be to them? How can we explain to them that this is a really key part of who we are?
I think it's a key part of who we are because I do hand on heart, believe that drag is the perfect medium for our incredibly complicated times. I don't think we've ever lived in, well, fact is, we've never lived in as complicated a time as this. And, you know, the years to come will be even more complicated. That's life. It just gets more complicated. And the reason why I think drag is so important is that it's a mistake to get hung up on the gender politics of it all. It's really about this idea that we're all naked and everything we put on is an expression of ourselves, whether it's who we feel we are or who we want to be.
Totally.
And that's the importance of drag. The other thing that's important about drag is that it's a kind of play. It's a kind of pretend. And again, I think it's extraordinarily important not to take things too seriously. And which doesn't mean to be flippant or facetious about life. Take it passionately, but also know that, you know, you need to have a sense of playfulness is really kind of important. And it's not really so very different from what kids do. They play dress up when they're getting
totally.
When they're, and they play pretend games. And these are all the way in which people become socialized, have empathy, have compassion for others who aren't like themselves. So in all these different ways, I think drag is a vital, crucial medium for our time. So that what's happening now, although it's not necessarily new, because, you know, when the Stonewall riots happened in 1969, it was against the law for men to dress as women.
Mm.
But it's depressing to be here again. It feels like, you know, oh my God, history repeating. But, you know, it's that's why I think it's really important. I also know that it will fail. This, as all attempts to turn, any attempt to turn the clock back or to repress people is doomed to failure, whether it's Russia's war on Ukraine or the attempt in the US to ban drag. Yeah. You know, the only way is forward.
We're too loud.
No, it is complicated, and I understand that it scares people. You know, I think that that's kind of the point, one of the points about Screen Age. One of the reasons I wrote it is, you know, I grew up with people, adults, condemning television as a waste of time, you know, wishing it didn't exist. But it does exist.
It does.
It needs to exist. And we are living in the Screen Age. And so let's just deal with it rather than try to put our heads in the sand and sort of just, you know, try and get it.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more with you. And excitingly, speaking about TV, we've got season 3 of Drag Race Down Under almost upon us. I'm so thrilled every time this show comes around, and I feel so proud to see some of my friends on the show, to be, like I said, to be a part of it, even, you know, adjacent in the podcast. It's just so special to our community. But is there something about Aussie drag that you particularly love? Because I know we're a bit ratchet. I know we're like, you know, we can be very, like, the girls can be really rude to each other. But that's a term of endearment. It's like our use of, you know, language here in Australia.
I love that. I live for it. It's like you, it's like, for me, it's a highlight of my year, because I love that outspokenness. And I love that kind of, I think in the States, they like to call it radical candor. somehow it's some sort of, you know, but I just love that ability to say really the joy of speech, just saying something rather than like tiptoeing around it and feeling something but not saying it, which is so often, being British, something that I grew, you know, we always like feeling. And in America, I think there's a, you know, extraordinary anxiety around language and free speech at the moment. So I love it. I mean, you know, Down Under queens are amazing. That's what, you know, drag isn't, it's not necessarily about any particular one thing or another. It's not necessarily about Hollywood. It's not necessarily about passing. It's not necessarily about spending a lot of money on your outfits.
Mm.
It's the magic. It's the ability to embrace that sense of play. And what Randy and I always loved about it in these village days was that it's like making something out of nothing. You know, taking a shit situation and pretending it's something else.
Which is something you have done so, so well. And look, Honestly, Fenton, it's a career highlight to be able to speak to you today. Thank you so much for all of the incredible projects that you've created over the years, from, you know, the Eyes of Tammy Faye, Party Monster, just so many of my favorites. And you have impacted our lives so much. And I can't wait for people to read Screen Age. It's available now, and also to see season 3 of Drag Race Down Under. I hope that there are so many more wouldn't it be cool moments coming from you.
Oh, well, let's hope so. Thank you so much, Justin. It's
my pleasure.
Hey, give me a little pep.
Anytime.
Ah, what a wealth of inspiration that man is. Now, this season in the podcast, each week I'm going to be joined by some of my favorite people and fellow RuPaul's Drag Race lovers. Plus, as always, I'll be unpacking the episode with the eliminated queen each week, gagging, gooping, kicking, and all those other words that we like to use in our little Drag Race family. Catch the first episode of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under exclusively on Stan from Friday, July 28. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on the Listener app so you don't miss a minute of the charisma, uniqueness, nerve, or talent. I'm Justin Hill, and I'll see you next Monday with our first eliminated queen. Until then, look over there!